Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response midday for the 27th day of Tishrei. Today we have the opportunity to learn from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach from Shut Minchat Shlomo Tinyana, which is volumes Bet and Gimel, Siman Kuf Yutet, response number 119. Which is interesting to me because yesterday's response was also 119, although in Mishpat Kohen. A complete coincidence as far as I know. Let's thank the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bramowitz, David Hachhauser, for putting the shiurim online, making them available to you. And let's even maybe email them and say thank you to Jacob Bramowitz at the OU. I think it's jack8ou.org. And I can't remember David Hachhauser's email right now, but maybe we should start an email campaign thanking them for putting this stuff online and making it available to you. Today we're going to talk about Shemitah issues. And the question that was facing Shlomo Zalman was Kiddushei Shvi'it, whether there's we have to treat as produce of Shvi'it cotton fibers. This is from the 27th of Tishrei of Tov Shin Chof Zayin in 1966. He's writing to a Yisrael Moshe Aronson, or it's a Yud Mem Aronson, who is a Rav in Petach Tikva, and he apologizes for the delay in answering, in responding. But apparently, this Rav Aronson had sent him a long essay, or maybe in a sefer, about whether Shemitah should apply to cotton. The reason why it wouldn't apply to cotton is the cotton isn't a food, and therefore you might think it doesn't count as a produce, as a vegetable or a fruit, as a produce of the Shemitah year, and therefore you might think that you don't have to treat it as Shemitah, the product of it as Shemitah. Meaning there's in Shemitah issues, there's work in the land and what you're allowed to do and not allowed to do towards work the land, and then there's how we have to treat fruit of Shemitah, produce of Shemitah. That's a separate set of halachot. And his suggestion apparently was that he thought cotton you shouldn't have to treat as Shemitah produce because it's not produce, because it's only used for creating clothing. And he called it Yeshuat Moshe. I'm not sure if Yeshuat Moshe was a long essay or if it was a book. And then he says, it seems like it was safer because Rav Shlomo Zalman says, so now I took myself an opportunity to look at what I took, what I wrote in the margins, wrote on the page when I got the sefer. It seems like Shlomo Zalman, whether or not he had the time then to sit down and write back an answer, as soon as he got a sefer, he went to the sefer, took notes on the side, made comments on the side, and then was ready to answer it. So now he's ready to answer it. So he goes back and looks what he wrote. So at the end of Od Vav, I won't tell you where it was in the future, but he's telling it to this guy because the guy has the sefer in front of him. So this Rav Aronson had written the cotton fibers shouldn't have any Shemitah issue to them, and that will affect, if you're going to make material or clothing out of cotton fibers, and they're Shemitah cotton fibers, you're going to have whole sets of halachot that you're going to have to worry about, because in Shemitah issues, we're not allowed to throw it out the same way as you throw out other things. We have to let it rot on its own, and then we're allowed to throw it out. We're supposed to use up as much of it as we can. We have to only use it, we're only allowed to own it till Shat HaBiyu, and then we have to be mafka. There's all sorts of halachot that come up with Shemitah produce, so if you say that it doesn't apply to cotton, that will affect or help the deal, or if you say it does apply to cotton, that will change how we deal with cotton during a Shemitah year, that's produced during a Shemitah year, greatly. And the assumption here is I'm pretty sure that we're not thinking of this, we're not following the Het Mechira for this discussion. We're not allowing ourselves to sell the land of Israel or accept that that works in terms of preventing produce from becoming Shemitah produce. So his solution was, well, maybe we can say, by, at least in the case of cotton, that it doesn't count. So Shlomo Zalman says, I'm not sure, because the Gemara says that lulavim, so let's remember, lulavim are the branches of palm trees, and that shvi'it applies to them, even though they're trees. They're literally branches of trees. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's true that the ma'aseh mikilim, that we today are making, we act leanly, and we do not treat the lulavim of Shemitah years as Shemitah produce, but that's because in our times you don't use a lulav for anything other than the mitzvah. That's what he suggests, that in times of the Gemara, lulavim would have been used l'kibud bayit. They would make brooms out of them because they're stiff branches. So if you put them on a broom and you sweep with them, you can get the dirt out. Or since most trees are for burning and therefore don't count as produce, so those trees that you're going to use for some other purpose are batil ligabayu. So Rishon Balzamin then says it, then you have to think about in our times whether that's still true, because today there are people who use a lot of trees. Now, I'm not sure why this wasn't true in the time of the Gemara as well, but there are a lot of people who use a tree for furniture or to get warm by them or to use them for cooking. I think Rishon Balzamin's point is that when we say the trees are for hasaka, for burning, we mean for burning for purposes that people don't get direct benefit from. But if you're going to use trees as fuel for heating the house or as fuel for the oven so that you can cook things, right, then that would seem to be in the group of things that Shemitah would apply to, furniture all that, then that's being used for human purposes, and therefore that would be, he says, at our times, you'd have to think that maybe, in fact, trees you have to worry about, and then maybe, in fact, lulav you have to worry about, like they did in the time of the Gemara. And that's all for actual trees, but the cotton fibers, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, aren't even trees in that sense, and therefore, it doesn't make sense to say that they wouldn't count as Shemitah Pradesh. So then this variance had also suggested in a later section, later paragraph, that maybe also we can relate them, even if you're going to say that they're not like trees in the sense of like a lulav, like a palm branch, but they are maybe like trees in the sense of like pishtan. We have Mishnahs in Bava Madlikin that we say every Friday night about pishtan, which is flax, that we treat flax like a tree, and therefore it doesn't count as a Shemitah Pradesh, this Rabbi Aronson suggested, and therefore maybe we should treat cotton the same way, but Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says it might not even be true about pishtan, because it might be that with pishtan, we treat it as a yotze mina. It's not as an actual tree, but as something that comes from a tree. And the only point of pishtan in the Mishnah to say that it was like a tree was to tell us that we could use it for lighting candles on Friday night. That's the topic of the chapter there. And maybe the whole point was that even though we could consider it something that's yotze mina, it comes out of a tree rather than the tree itself, that we might be allowed to say, nonetheless, we can treat it enough like a tree to use it for lighting, but then that wouldn't tell us anything about its Shemitah status, is saying Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And that is a puzzle. I just don't know the answer to this question. I'm sure somebody knows it, and you can email me at grothst@gmail.com, and I hope you will. But then he says, and I think it's more similar to Tzemer Geffen. Now, as far as I can tell, Kutna, Sibe Kutna are cotton fibers, and Tzemer Geffen is cotton. Now, it could be that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach thought that the word Sibe, or understood the word Sibe Kutna to mean only the fibers before they're woven into, or spun into cotton itself, and then when it's cotton itself, he calls it Tzemer Geffen. I'm not sure if that's what he means, but he says he thinks that these things, the Sibe Kutna, are more similar to Tzemer Geffen, and most Rishonim already knew of Kutna, of Tzemer Geffen, and they thought that it was considered Priyait, they thought that it was considered produce of a tree, a product of a plant or a tree, and therefore they thought that you'd have to treat it like Shemitah produce, and it came up in the Achronim because you would use it in terms of tobacco, of cigarettes. So tobacco also is something that grows out of the ground, but you don't use it for food, and yet once you start smoking it, that's not food, but you're smoking it, and yet the Achronim all agree, or most of the Achronim agree, that you treat it like, with Kiddush HaShvi'it. We have to treat it as having the sanctity of Shvi'it produce, because the fact that people use it for smoking makes it a human use, and therefore you have to use it, you have to treat it with the Shemitah sanctity. Even matches that come from gofrit, from sulfur, the Gemara in Shabbos, Rav Shlomo Zalman knows, but doesn't quote, seems to say that if it had any roots in the ground, you would treat it as Shvi'it, and there clearly you don't use it for human purposes other than for ancillary purposes. So that's so fundamentally he's saying, I've got a lot of sources that tell me that there are a lot of materials that we don't use for actual human food and yet count as Shemitah produce because of the other human uses that we make of them. Now, it happens to be there's also a Gemara in Sukkah, Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, that he refers to, which says that you cannot buy a shirt, a chaluk, a shirt, a cloak, a night shirt, a dress of some sort. You can't buy clothing, it seems to say, with bidmei shvi'it, with the money of Shvi'it, meaning Shvi'it is tofes et demeh. I'm pretty sure that if you pay money for Shemitah food, that money becomes demeh Shvi'it, and you have to use it only for certain purposes. So it sounds like, from there, that clothing can't be included in Shvi'it, because when you have demeh Shvi'it, you have to buy with them stuff that Shvi'it applies to, that Shemitah applies to, and that would include fruits and vegetables and things like that. Generally, you can buy with demeh Shvi'it. So when it says you can't buy clothing with it, it sounds like clothing are not included in the Shemitah issues, but that's hard, that he finds that difficult to understand, since he's come to believe that these kinds of things, when they're produced out of the ground, have the sanctity of Shvi'it. So why can't it be when they're clothing that we can buy them because they're considered part of Shvi'it? So this Rav Aronson has suggested that it's because they were so different than when they came out of the ground. They had been changed so much, they had been processed so much, that they lost their connection to their original thing. So meaning that it would be cotton counts as a product of Shemitah, and cotton fibers, but actual clothing, actual material made of cotton, would not. That was Rav Aronson's suggestion. The Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says he doesn't really understand that, because there are other things that we do that with, let's say basar v'dagim, where you can buy meat and fish with demei shvi'it, and you can also buy, this is the better proof for his position and his concern, you're also allowed to buy mashkin hayotzin. So mashkin hayotzin is a topic that comes up in several places in halacha, one of them being in brachos situations. Mashkin hayotzin is liquids that ooze out of fruit. So liquids that you squeeze out of fruit, that's clear you're trying to get the liquid out of the fruit, and that has a bracha in there, you would make a bracha on it. But there's actually a debate about what bracha you would make. There's a Yerushalmi, I know this because of a story from Shir many, many years ago when I was in Shir with, I don't know if he'd want this attached to his name, but with a certain Rebbe whose Shir I valued greatly, and he asked the question, and the correct answer was the Yerushalmi. The question was, and who would hold that you make a Bari Priha 8 on orange juice? Because the question is, mashkin yotzin, if you squeeze it for it, then maybe that's what you intended to get out of it, and never even make a bari priya eitz. And the answer is looking for the Yerushalmi. And then somebody in the Shir, not me, said the Chazon Ish, which I didn't know, I wouldn't have known, and I still haven't seen it inside myself, but the Magid Shir said, that's true. It's almost 2,000 years away from the answer I was looking for, but it's incorrect. So mashkin yotzin is this question of liquid that comes out of a fruit. Some sources will say that it's squeezed out of the fruit. Some sources will say, no, it's just what oozes out of the fruit. So in brachos issues, there's a whole question about whether it counts as part of the fruit enough that it gets a bracha at all, or it gets a shakol, or maybe even a bari priya eitz, depending on what you do. But that would affect our understanding of how it counts as shmita issues, maybe. And yet, we say no. We say for sure you can buy that stuff with Dmei Shvi'it. If you have Shvi'it money, you have to use that Shvi'it money for Shvi'it products. Nobody would think that if somebody had collected orange juice that just naturally oozed out of the oranges, that you wouldn't be able to buy it. Because when we say that it's like a Zeya Be'alma in the Gemara, when we say it's just a sort of a sweating, as it were, of the fruit, we mean that in terms of its connection to the actual original fruit and brachos issues, things like that. But in terms of Shemitah, everybody would understand that it counts as a produce that you can use and buy your Shemitah and use your Shemitah money to buy that with. And as proof of that point, he points out that nobody would think that if you drink it on Yom Kippur, that that's okay because it's only Zeya Be'alma. So all these things which are not actually the original fruits or things, and meat and, he keeps saying meat and fish, and I think he means meat and fish aren't produce at all, and yet you're allowed to buy them. And you're allowed to buy them because if they were to grow on trees, they would be a food, and you can buy them, is what he says. Then how come you can't buy, now he says, not only clothing, why can't you buy furniture with Dmei Shvi'it, like a chair? It comes from wood, which comes from trees, which has Kedushat Shvi'it. Excuse me, which has Kedushat Shvi'it to it. So he doesn't understand why. He says he doesn't know why, and then he says, but once that's true, once you have this Gemara and the Rishonim are clear that you're not allowed to buy clothing with Dmei Shvi'it, with the money of Shvi'it, that makes clear that for whatever the reason is, and he's not sure what the reason is, those items, I think the reason is because they're not food, and the understanding of the Gemara was that it only applies to food. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Breuer was pointing out that he doesn't know why it only applies to food. It's not for me to say at all. I don't know the circuit nearly as well as he did, but that's what seems to be going on. But he says, once it's true that there's no Kedushat Shvi'it in the case of that you cannot use money of Shvi'it to buy clothing or furniture, it would seem clear that the original items that were grown only to produce them, and cotton is certainly something that's grown to produce only clothing, so that, and this is the clothing clearly don't have any Kedushat Shvi'it, then apparently there wouldn't be Kedushat Shvi'it in the Sibei Kutna in the cotton fibers as well. That's the fibers. Now what about cottonseed oil? Right, so cottonseed oil comes out of the seeds, and so this Reb Aaronson had written that it should be treated like a Zeya Be'alma in the context of what we saw before. Zeya Be'alma, that sometimes liquids that flow out of an item are treated in halacha as not the item itself, but as some kind of a secretion, a seeping out of, and does not have the full halachic standard status of the original item. So Shlomo Zalman says he doesn't think that people squeeze cotton seeds anymore to get the oil. They cook them to get the oil. And according to that issue, in that context, when you cook something to get the liquid out of it, the consensus of the poskim, says Shlomo Zalman Reibach, is the lo chashiv kizeya. It's not considered a zeya, just a sweaty, a sort of a liquid that seeps out. It's considered an actual full liquid. And therefore, to the extent that it's grown for the purpose of getting the cottonseed oil, then it would seem to be a food item, right? It's used for food and cooking, and a food item that has been gotten out of plants that grow in Shemitah, it should seem to have the Shemitah halachos to it. Although, Rav Shlomo Zalman can recognize the other, an opposite side to that question, because if the seeds themselves, he says, don't have any taste, if the seeds don't have any taste, then it doesn't quite count as a food item. And then when the material comes out of it, maybe you could say there's no halacha of tam ki ikar, that has the taste of the original plant in it, and then maybe you would once again treat them as a zeya, meaning it could be that if you get liquids out of plants, even though you can use those liquids for cooking purposes, since they don't provide any taste whatsoever, then they'll be like a neutral item. And once they're neutral, they don't really have any value, any counting in terms of what counts for food, and therefore they'd be a zeya ba'alma. Once again, we would treat them as a zeya. Then there's a variance that also brought another svara about cotton fibers. Now, Rishlomo Zalman, we have seen already, has agreed that apparently they shouldn't be treated as Shemitah issues. Now he's just going through the discussion and the ideas, and because that'll be important for this issue, but maybe for others that come up. So this Rabbi Aronson has suggested also that cotton shouldn't count for Shemitah purposes because they have changed from what they originally were completely, and therefore it's what's called a panim chadashos, which most of us perhaps know only from the context of weddings, and that when you have Shabbat brachos, you need to have somebody there who wasn't there at the wedding before, so he's called a panim chadashos, a new face. So panim chadashos, though, in the Gemara can also mean when you're something completely new, you've changed one item into so much into another item, it's as if the first item never existed. It's a panim chadashot ba'olakad. It's a whole new thing, a whole new item that has come here. So that's what this Rav Aronson has suggested. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says, it's clear what you mean is that since flax isn't really usable, so you know what? I said cottonseed before, but maybe I meant flaxseed. Because now he's clearly talking about flax. He says that flax is clearly not usable when it originally grows in the ground, and there's nothing to do with it. And the only way that you can get to hana, to a benefit of it, is after you change it in some significant ways. And he brought this Rav Aronson and cited a Chazon Ish. Shlomo Zalman says he's not sure, because I know of other things that are unusable in their original form, and yet we treat them with the Kedusha of Shemitah. So there are certain kinds of dyes, and there are also certain kinds of cleansing agents. There's borit and ahal is a perfume that also, when they originally were grown, you couldn't do anything with them, and we process them in various ways to get out of them the use that we get out of them. There's also certain spices that you can't eat on their own in any way whatsoever, and they're only there to help give taste into something else, and even so, there are those who hold that we have to treat them as Shemitah produce because they're produce, even though they can't be eaten at all. Right? Those aren't a question of changing them. Their hana is only, their benefit is only after you crush them and you change what they look like, and then you don't even see them when they provide the taste. And yet, we hold, many poskim hold that you have to treat them with kedusha treat, with the sanctity of the Shemitah year. And in any case, he says, you know, when it comes to furniture, certainly it's more recognizable as the original wood, meaning when we grow wood, the reason the Gemara gives for the fact that we grow wood, that the wood itself doesn't kedusha shvit if it's ever cut down or falls off or whatever, is because most wood is used just for burning. And Rav Shlomo Zalman pointed out, and when we say burning, we mean burning not for the purposes of cooking and of heating households. I don't know if that's true anymore, but therefore you don't have to treat it with kedusha shvit. And then we said that's why lulav doesn't need to be treated with kedusha shvit, because the lulav falls under the rubric of wood in general, which is generally grown for burning in the sense of burning non for direct human purposes. But Rav Shlomo Zalman had been wondering about furniture, because that's a human purpose, and along the lines of cotton as well, of cotton clothing as well, and that was saying, and he says, and those, if you're going to tell me the svara is, the idea is, panim chadasha ba'olakan, that's what exempts you, but when it comes to furniture, the panim chadasha is much less so, because it's much more clearly identifiable as wood that came off of a tree than all of these things that we treat with these dyes and spices that we treat with kedusha shvit. And then he points out that this Rav Aronson had said that had cited to explain why furniture wouldn't count, why we wouldn't use it, why we wouldn't say that the fact that human beings can use it for furniture or clothing wouldn't count, is because maybe, as I said before, this Rav Aronson has suggested that you see it from Trumat Namasrat, that we only obligate produce in Trumat Namasrat if that produce is going to produce food. So maybe you could say that, but Midi Rabbanan, we obligate certain kinds of fruits, certain kinds of liquids, which are only usable after they've been completely changed. So why wouldn't it be true by Shemitah, in the case of Shemitah, that even though it's an item that's going to change significantly from what it originally looked like, that you would nonetheless have to give Shemitah? So he's not sure that that reasoning holds water. Coming back in here, it's clear that it's cotton seeds, rather than, I was worried it was flax seeds, cotton seeds. He holds, since that we use them for oil, then the Kedusha of Shvit, the sanctity of Shvit, applies to them even before it, even when they're not yet processed to produce the oil, because they're going to produce the oil, and therefore it applies to them. That is in contrast to certain kinds of olive seeds, which are not used, he's saying, not used in general for any kind of an oil. The olives themselves are, but not the olive seeds. And therefore, they wouldn't have the status of something that's being used for an oil and going to be used for a product. But if you eventually use, there's some olive seeds that, let's say, break open, or you find a way to break them open, and you get some oil out of them and use them for that, then, in fact, they would have Kedushat Shvi to them, because then you, in fact, have used them for a human purpose. Coming back again at this issue of things that change their shape significantly, and that should mean that they don't have a Shemitah issue. Rosh Hashanah says, would anybody think that sugar wouldn't have Kedushat Shvi, wouldn't have the sanctity of Shvi, because it's changed very greatly? We get sugar from sugar cane. Sugar cane was a cane, and it's tough, and you make sugar out of it, if you make cane sugar, but you make sugar out of it. So sugar comes from cane that's completely changed in the process of processing and making it, and yet nobody would think that just because it's changed so much, there's no way you could look at sugar cane and think, oh, sugar, right? It's that you taste the sugar cane and you find ways to get out the sugar out of it, however you do it. But when you do it, the stuff that you come up with, it looks completely different. Nobody would think that that means it doesn't have Kedushat Shvi'it, even though it's completely changeable and it's not recognizable as having come from the original cane. And then he points out that we have other examples of that, of change not being relevant to the Shemitah question. If somebody bows down to Pishtun, to flax, why they would do that, I don't know. But let's say somebody worships flax in some way. They think flax is the power that rules their lives, and they bow down to it. So the act of bowing down is an act of what is or an act of worship. Even if that particular form of religion doesn't think it's an act of worship, we halakhically think it's always an act of worship. So you bow down to it, that would ordinarily make something prohibited for people to use, because that's the rule in Avodah Zarah. That once an item has been an item of Avodah Zarah, Jews are not going to get any benefit from it. And yet, the halacha is, you can still use that flax to make that pishtun, that linen, to make it into linen, and then to make tzitzis from it. Which means, apparently, that you can use it. Now, you could say mitzvos la leinon, you don't get benefit from mitzvos, different discussion. But the Rambam gets the halacha in the first chapter of Hilchot Tzitzis for the fact that if somebody bows down to wheat, you can still use the flour from that wheat for minachot. And the reason is the meikara chiti v'hashta kimcha, because the change from wheat to flour is so significant that it means that it's something completely different here. And yet nobody would claim that flour isn't included in the halachas of Shemitah. So the fact that it changed so much clearly isn't the answer to why some things are or aren't included in the halachas of Shemitah. So why is it that certain liquids that come out are not treated that way? So the Rosh Hashanah Orbach says that's because once we consider them Zeya B'Alma, if we consider them Zeya B'Alma, and that frees them of the obligations of Shemitah, that's because we don't think they count as having come from the fruit at all. Zeya B'Alma means they're not a substance, and therefore they don't have any significance, and therefore they're not included in the nature of that substance. There's a bit more to that tshuva, but you know what? I'm going to stop here because that's what the tshuva is. I looked for other tshuvot, short, brief tshuvot for the 27th of Tishrei, and find them quickly. So we'll just stop here, and I hope you won't tell me that I've cheated you of 7 minutes of Torah for today. I feel like, on balance, I probably can go over more than I go under, but maybe I'm already wrong. I will say that many years ago, when I used to do the Nach Yomi for the OU, which is a wonderful project and worth taking on if you have the time to learn Nach, it's a wonderful thing. So a guy met me, who I never met before. He said, "You're Rabbi Rothstein." I said, "Yes." He said, "I hear you on Nach Yomi, and I just want to tell you one thing." He said something nice first. I should say, I don't want to misportray him, but I should say one thing. You know, you don't have to fill the whole half hour if you don't want to. So today I'm not filling the whole half hour, and I hope you will forgive me for that. Responsible day for the 27th of Tishrei. Have a great day.